Whether this is her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct is everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
I'm Katie Couric.
And I'm Brian Cranston.
And this is Next Question. Think I have a future?
Yeah, let's try it again. This time...
a little perkier. That's right. My guest today is Brian Cranston. Those of you who haven't been living under a rock know that Brian is a force, a performer as comfortable on screens large and small as he is on a Broadway stage. But more than anything, honestly, he's just an all-around good human being. And as I found out during our conversation, also an avid reader of Wake Up Call.
I get your newsletter every morning.
Aw, thank
and
you, Brian.
Yes.
And you open it, more importantly.
I do. I read it all the time.
So, friends, be like Brian Cranston, informed and entertained with Wake Up Call. That's our daily newsletter delivered Monday through Saturday in your inbox bright and early. In it, we break down the top news stories of the day, we answer all of your pressing questions, and we scour the internet for the best entertainment tidbits, streaming recommendations, recipes, and health and wellness tips. It's like a one-stop shop for smart, busy people like you and Brian Cranston. Okay, done with the shameless plug. Let's get back to business. Brian Cranston, welcome back to the podcast.
That's so nice to see you.
How are you? You're looking very scruffy these days. Well, you've got a big beard going. What's that about?
You know, it's about, I'm doing a second season of Your Honor for Showtime.
Right. Which did incredibly well, by the way. I loved Your Honor, but I read recently it was like one of the biggest shows on Showtime in a long time.
Yeah, they tell us it was the highest rated series they've ever had.
Wow.
So that's pretty good. And so they wanted to do another one. And I said, I'd like to do another season, but only if we follow in an honest, authentic way where that character would go.
Because it seems to me, with all due respect, Mr. Cranston, that this series did not exactly lend itself to a second series. I mean, things tied up pretty neatly, very traumatically, I might add. Yeah. I don't want any spoilers here, but I had a hard time when I heard there was going to be a second season. I thought, how are you going to do that?
How am I going to do that? I thought the same thing because it ended tragically.
It
which
did.
Is not, which is a not a the wrong way to end that first season. And then I thought, well, if the first season was about a man losing his sense of principles and dignity and integrity, can the second season be about redemption? And I think our society is yearning for that.
That's a good
point,
actually.
Trying to understand, where does forgiveness exist in our society now? It seems so coarse. It seems so vitriolic, you know, we've had people who have been leading this country who believe that forgiveness and apology are signs of weaknesses in the human character. And I don't believe that. I believe it's actually a strength.
And in fact, you've been pretty vocal, if I recall, about sort of cancel culture, haven't you? Did you get in a little hot water about that, Brian?
Well, you know what happened? I was doing a play in London. And I had a film coming out, so the BBC wanted to do an interview with me, and I said, okay. And they said, they're going to want you to talk about President Trump, and I said, okay. And they're going to want to talk about the Me Too movement, I said, okay. All of which, you know, it's a wake-up call in many regards for both of those issues. The question came to me, do you think that Kevin Spacey can resurrect his career? And I was taken aback a little bit about that directness. And then I realized the association. The BBC is asking that because Kevin Spacey was the artistic director of the Old Vic Theater, right? And I said, I don't think so. But if he does a lot of personal work on himself, if he really goes into therapy and really gets to the root of what was causing this behavior of his, and not in a two-month dude ranch kind of thing in Colorado, but a real earnest attempt to figure things out. And if he showed genuine contrition, maybe in 5 to 10 years, society would accept him back if he did all that work.
And you got pummeled for that.
I did. We were in a redlining situation at the time where they thought I was trying to defend him, but really I was trying to look at a bigger picture of our society.
Right.
Where does it all fit? And so when this idea to possibly do a second season of Your Honor came along, I thought, I think this might help people who live in despair and in pain. How do they cope? How can they find a pathway to the rest of their lives? And I think it's a service. You personally went through it yourself. You had to figure out a path to get through so that you can be strong again. And I marvel at your ability to be able to do that.
You mean from the death of my husband?
Yeah.
You know, I think also this sort of public shaming, which I didn't experience, but certainly many high-profile figures have, sometimes it's definitely warranted. But I think you're right. At what point can there be or should there be redemption? And I don't know the answer to that, but I think that's such a topic that's so ripe for exploration. And getting back to Your Honor, for people who haven't seen the first series, and I urge them to do so they can see the second series when it comes out, can you just basically give us the nutshell of this character? Because I found him so fascinating.
Michael Desiato is a Superior Court judge in New Orleans, Louisiana. He has a 17-year-old son, and his wife was a photojournalist who was murdered a year earlier through a course of the remembrance of the day that she passed. My son, who was distraught and is an asthmatic, gets into a car accident, and he hits a young boy on a motorcycle. He panics and leaves the scene of the accident, almost immediately feeling guilty and realizing he's made a mistake. And he confesses to me, his father, what happened. And after receiving that devastating news and dealing with that by itself, I convey to him that we need to do the right thing. We need to turn you in and be responsible, because if you don't do that now, you will forever be damaged by that decision.
Right.
So I go to turn him in to the police, and I'm going to hire a lawyer for him and see how things end up. And what happens is that at the police station, I notice the parents of the boy who died in that car accident, and they are part of the most violent and dangerous mob in all of Louisiana. And I know, or at least I feel I know, that man, if he found out my son killed his son, he would go and kill my son within the structure of the court system. So I make an immediate decision not to turn my son in. From that point on,
everything
unravels,
and you get deeper and deeper. It's not the crime, it's the cover-up. And I found the character so fascinating because of all these sort of ethical lapses and how one leads to another, to another, to another. And I don't know, I'm obsessed with characters who are guilt-ridden. I don't know if you remember that movie, Bob Roberts, I think it was called.
Mm-hmm.
And it was with, was that, Tim Robbins,
yeah.
And I think he commits a crime. And the idea of doing something and being, like, having to hide that and feel this overwhelming, overflowing guilt. I have nightmares about that. I don't know why those characters, I think that's my biggest fear. Like, not doing something wrong, but having to hide it.
Yeah, because you feel like you'll be exposed.
Yes, of course.
And but when you think about it, that's one of the wonderful things about human beings, is that we do carry guilt. And we do have that because we are not made to that. We're social animals. We want to strive to do what is best. I really believe that. And when we explore in this season of Your Honor, the idea that my character is going through despair and grief, I think it's a valuable thing to, and the movement that he makes, I had to really convince the people at Showtime. It's like, trust me, I think this will work. But I also,
so you wanted to do it?
Oh yeah, yeah.
You wanted to do it.
Well, I wanted to do that. If
they weren't saying to you, this show did so well, we need a second season.
They did.
Yeah.
And I said, I will do a second season if I can do this with that character.
Got it.
But otherwise, I don't have to do another one.
This podcast is brought to you by NerdWallet. Are you paying for your me time with just any credit card in your wallet? While you shouldn't stop treating yourself, you should start paying with a credit card that has perks. NerdWallet lets you compare top travel credit cards side by side to maximize your spending, some even offering 10 times points on your spending. So what could future you do with better rewards? A free flight? Room upgrades? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh, my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, how is Michael different from Walter White? And are there similarities in their characters? Because they are sort of, at their core, good people who, because of circumstances, become bad people.
Yeah. Well, I think what Walter White taught me is that nothing is black and white. Pardon the pun, but there's a lot of gray area. I don't think human beings are just one thing. We have good qualities and we have bad qualities. We have things about us that we're proud of and things that we're, I need to improve in this area. Hopefully they're not criminal, but that's human beings. The common denominator is that Michael Desiato and Walter White were played by the same person. So there's always going to be a through line of that.
Does Michael wear tidy whities?
He does not. He does not.
He's a boxer.
He's a boxer.
Kind
he's
of
a
guy.
Boxer man.
Yeah.
But the difference is that the attempts, we want to see characters attempting to do the right thing at the best of their ability. But if they're damaged and troubled people, men in this case, then they may not be capable of doing the right thing at the right time always.
And it's always about sort of how one bad decision can change everything in an instant. You've said you're attracted to damaged characters who still have some manner of humanity and decency within them, despite their flaws and shortcomings. So I guess that does describe Michael and Walter.
I think that's the, and those are the kinds of characters I get offered, is to play really damaged.
And you're such
men.
A nice guy. How is that?
Well, I can relate. I mean, I'm human.
You are human, but I mean, I don't know you that well, but I would say you're incredibly decent and morally upstanding individual. I feel like you have certain values that you adhere to, and you know, you've got, I don't know, and you've heretofore have played pretty wholesome characters prior to Breaking Bad. So, you know, how come we're just now seeing the darker side of Bryan Cranston emerge?
Well, when you think of it from a standpoint of a dramatic narrative, the most interesting things to play are damaged people. We don't want to see in our dramas, we don't want to see people do all the right things all the time. They would never make it into a show or a movie.
Right.
Because it's not interesting. So there's going to be a turn. There's going to be problems in that person's life that they are either capable or incapable of overcoming. And that's what makes drama so fascinating.
You're the happy beneficiary of this national obsession, I think, with crime and sort of thrillers and whodunit. And I'm curious what you think about that whole trend, because everything seems to either be based on true crime or a fictionalized version of some kind of terrible event.
Well, I know I am more interested in the human element of it, and whether that takes me in the genre of crime or a medical or whatever the main areas of interest are, I'm always interested in the story. Does the story resonate with me? And so you look at Breaking Bad, and Breaking Bad was a story of a man's plight and struggle through this horrific prognosis of a limited life, and he wanted to set his family up for after he's gone, and so he elicited a lot of
his motives
sympathy
were good
for that. It's just his decision making, and also an indictment of the health system, that a fully employed teacher needs to have a second job in order to pay for the special needs son,
right,
and his care. And then you have Your Honor, which had the concept of what would you do to save the life of your child? And if you ask any parent, it's like, I would do anything to save the life of my child. I would do anything. And I ask people, would you willingly become a criminal if you knew that by doing so, you would save the life of your child? Yes, I would. Okay, then we take it a step further. Would you allow an innocent person to be hurt or killed in the line of saving your, you know, and then all of a sudden, oh, you can't go back. My character can't retrace his steps and clean it up and make good on something. His spiral already started, and he is in this mess. And that's what, to echo your point, is that we have to try to make the best decisions at that time that you can. And my character didn't have the luxury of thinking, what are the repercussions of this initial decision?
I remember that scene where he's watching the family. I think he was in the parking lot.
Yeah.
Michael was, and he thought, he made that split second decision. Nope, this isn't going to happen. We're not going to do the right thing. And the rest of the series obviously unfolds, and he gets deeper and deeper and deeper
right.
into, you know, lie begets lie begets lie.
Yeah.
I loved the series, and I think it was critically acclaimed. I think it got a lot of nice reviews, but you don't read reviews ever, 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 ever?
I did up until about 7-8 years ago when I read a couple reviews about a movie that I did that I thought was, oh, well, that doesn't, that's not helpful to me.
What movie was it?
Well, I don't want to, I don't want to throw this reviewer under the bus.
Oh, go ahead. That, we like to do that here on Next Question. We like to throw people under the bus. Come on, Brian.
I don't know.
It sounds like this person may deserve it.
Yeah, because this person was lazy and claimed certain things that an easy little research into it, and this person would have found, oh, I'm wrong about that and about this. And so I found the laziness of that to be irritating. And I also realized, and so I said, I don't think reading reviews helps me at all. And so I don't. I don't read reviews on when I do a Broadway show or when I do a movie, because it's not going to change anything. And I actually, most people are saying you could have 9 great reviews and 1 bad one. And the one you're going to think about most is the bad one.
Isn't it true? No matter how many things you've done and how many times you've been reviewed or critiqued, it still hurts, I think, when people say mean things about you. You know, are you on Twitter, by the way?
Well,
are you leaving Twitter?
I'm not. I'm not active.
You're
on
not
it,
active,
no.
But you would you? Do you want to stay on it?
I haven't really given it much thought. I certainly. My whole point. I long for the chance once again to have a respectful, logical disagreement with someone who who's more conservative than I am. I'm more liberal, but I want to have that debate again and not lose respect for each other, knowing that we're both trying to get to an accomplishment that benefits the country. That's the goal. We've kind of lost that.
I think we've been conditioned not to want it, given the kind of discourse or lack thereof that is everywhere. It's almost a sign, well, just as compromise on Capitol Hill is a sign of weakness, compromise or even a calm discussion seems to be a sign of weakness, openness, kind of willingness to listen. It has all been kind of, I think, I don't know. People just don't want to do it.
I agree with you. And what I was saying earlier, same thing. Asking forgiveness, apologizing, signs of weakness. I think that goes along with that our country has become coarser and harder. And I think if we can contribute anything to this, is to be able to try to break down that kind of calloused attitude and dogma, and be able to step back in and saying, let's have a respectful debate on what is best for our society, our country, our state, our city, or whatever the case.
Yeah.
I want to see if I can help bring the country together with less divisiveness and more spirit of unity. That would be great. When I see people who have integrity, and I want to meet them, I want to talk to them. It doesn't matter what side of the aisle they happen to be on.
This podcast is brought to you by NerdWallet. Are you paying for your me time with just any credit card in your wallet? While you shouldn't stop treating yourself, you should start paying with a credit card that has perks. NerdWallet lets you compare top travel credit cards side by side to maximize your spending, some even offering 10 times points on your spending. So what could future you do with better rewards? A free flight? Room upgrades? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I know you don't read reviews, Brian, but I did want to read this letter from Anthony Hopkins because it was so lovely. And it just made me like Anthony Hopkins even more than I already do. He wrote that your performance as Walter, his performance, I guess this was to you, right?
Yeah.
Your performance as Walter White was the best acting I have seen ever. I have never watched anything like it. Brilliant. I know there's so much smoke blowing and sickening bullshit in this business, and I've sort of lost belief in anything, really. But this work of yours is spectacular, absolutely stunning. From what started as a black comedy descended into a labyrinth of blood, destruction, and hell. It was like a great Jacobean, Shakespearean, or Greek tragedy. When you read that, obviously you read that. He delivered it or he had it sent to your house?
Yeah, I was actually in Boston at the time doing the out-of-town version of All the Way.
The play you did about LBJ.
Right. And we had just closed that show there. And I got this letter that was forwarded from, we have the same agent. And so it was forwarded from the agent, and I read it, and I went, "Oh my God!" But I am not the one to want to make these things public, and I didn't intend to make this public. But he gave praise to not just me, but the whole cast, and I felt I wanted to share that with the cast, and I should have said, "Please don't put this out on social media." I did not think in those terms, and I sent it to my cast and say, "I think you all should read this, isn't it?"
Lovely.
So lovely and mind-blowing. And then someone within our cast put it out on social media, and it went everywhere. And that wasn't the intention. I actually cringe a little bit because I would have rather have been just a private moment.
Well, having said that, what a nice gesture and what beautiful words. And
coming from one of the best actors to ever live.
And is there so much smoke blowing and sickening bullshit in your business?
Please. That, you're saying that rhetorically, aren't you?
Yeah. How do you deal with sort of the bullshit of showbiz?
Same way you do. You create.
I'm not in show business.
What
though?
Do you mean you're not in show business? Of course you are. Well, you're in show business.
I mean, let's
your
let's
job
say.
Is to entertain, and you do. You entertain. You inform. We're all in the business of entertainment. When you think about it, whether you're creating a service or a product, we're in entertainment. And I think the way to manage it, and what I tell young actors or writers or directors, people want to be in the business, get your personal life in order. Get that straight. Make sure that you love the work and not the idea of some effect of some result.
The fame.
Yes. Don't look ahead at like I'm out to get fame and fortune, because That's
a fool's errand, isn't it?
It is, because I wouldn't know how to approach that. Just focus on what you do and what you love to do, and if you're meant to get anything from that, it will happen.
I'm acting like I've known you since you were five, but it seems to me that you are very grounded and you really have never lost perspective per se. Also, you know, you were a successful actor, but your huge sort of success came later in life.
Yeah, I think that was a benefit because, you know, I've been married for 34 years
to
now.
Lovely
Robin. And we have a very good life. But it's very, very normal. And I remember when I was on Malcolm in the Middle and I was nominated for an Emmy, and we go to the Emmys and I'm in my tuxedo and everybody, Brian, and taking pictures with Robin and I, and we get in the limo and we're on the red carpet and it's all fancy Hollywood schmollywood. And we go home and I pay the babysitter and say goodnight. And Robin walks into the kitchen and turns her nose and goes, oh my God, what's that? And she discovers there's something stinky in the garbage. And she just picks up the plastic garbage bag and shoves it in my hands. And I don't say a word because that's my job.
Yeah.
And I open the back door and it's starting to drip. Something is really bad in here. And I'm holding the dripping garbage, smelly garbage bag out at arm's length so it doesn't drip on my tuxedo. And I'm walking out to the garbage and I realize not 20 minutes ago, people were, please, picture, let me take a picture. Will you have an autograph? And now I'm taking smelly garbage out of the, and I smiled because that's it. That's the reality of it. That's real life. That's tangible. It's right there, smelly garbage and all. And that's what I want to embrace. I want to embrace the reality of life. And if you can create a foundation of that, then you have room to dream and go and take chances. But you're kind of like an invisible tether to something that's real.
And that's why you should get sort of your personal life in order, because that is really what matters. That's what counts.
It does.
I think for so many young people who experience fame at a very early age, we see how destructive and toxic it is. And now, I don't know, we live in a culture where everybody can be famous on social media for one thing or another. And I worry about the impact it has on young people and sort of getting, you know, and I experienced this myself. You know, I think you get endorphins from external validation and affirmation, and the idea that their sense of self is predicated upon the number of likes or the followers. It's a very unhealthy, I think, recipe for living life as a healthy, kind of grounded person.
It's an extremely unhealthy way of life, I think, from our perspective. People of a certain age, looking back, we didn't have that when we were young. What do we do? How do we help this generation and the younger generations to come to realize what is really important to them? I think, used to be where if you weren't invited to a party and Monday morning you heard there was a party, oh, that's kind of a bummer. I wasn't invited, which happens to me. But now it's instantaneous. That party is happening right now because you're seeing real-time pictures that you are not there. That is devastating to young, formidable minds.
Yeah, listen, I'm glad, even though they're still only 26 and 31, I feel really bad for parents who are having to deal with it. And I think they just need to take it away, you know, take it away and have hours where they can be on their phones. But we digress, Brian, we digress. Let's talk about your mezcal company. And I want to know what else kind of you're excited about these days. Are you going to do, well, before we talk about mezcal, and I have a confession to make.
I know what your confession is.
I don't like mezcal.
I know that. The last time we had dinner, we were having mezcal and you went, I don't know, can I have something else? And I said, how dare you?
It's too smoky for me. I don't have a palate for it.
Yeah. You know, when you grow up, you know, you'll have an opportunity.
But the good news is a lot of people do.
Listen.
How's the company going?
It's gangbusters.
Really?
Aaron Paul and I started this 3.5 years ago, and we were I think there's 125 or 26 different mezcal brands in the world, and we were right there with them. 3.5 years later, we're now number 4.
Wow.
And yeah, we have our eyes set on being number 1. It's a nice lofty goal for us.
We should say the name of the brand.
Dos Hombres.
A shameless plug.
Dos Hombres Mezcal.
And what I like about your origin story, as they say, is that you didn't kind of just slap your name on a bottle.
No.
You actually did the work. You all went to Mexico. You went on, you know, a journey to find the best mezcal. I think I said it wrong. Mezcal.
Mezcal.
Mezcal. Mezcal. Yeah. Mezcal. And you did the work.
You know, that's the only way that I wanted to do it. Aaron and I have the same work ethic. We come from blue-collar families, and we don't really know any other way but just keep your head down and do the work, put in the hours. And whether it's mezcal or your own acting career, if you don't put in the hours and put in the work, you're not going to be successful. That's a guarantee. So we went down to Oaxaca, Mexico, and we sampled almost 100 different mezcals that didn't have brands connected to them. And we had very different palates. I have I tease him, I have a sophisticated palate, and he has kind of a brown paper bag in the parking lot palate.
According to you,
yeah,
I guess.
According to me, exactly. He loves a strong scotch. He loves a burning sensation. I'm not that way.
You're a smooth, mellow scotch guy.
I want to be introduced and seduced into my spirits.
So you're having a lot of fun with that, right? I mean,
we're the Dos Hombres.
Yeah,
we're.
And what about theater? You know, I loved All the Way. I also saw you in Network. We went to see you at a play in a play in Los Angeles that I thought was wonderful. Yeah. Written by, I think, someone who works with my daughter on a show called The Boys.
Right.
Right.
Paul Grelaw.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you love the theater.
Mm-hmm.
And do you have any plans to revisit something, or why are you looking at me like that?
I do, because it's one other thing that I can't really talk about, but I'm developing something, and I know you're going to want me to—I can't
spill—
Can you
give me a little bit of a hint?
Yeah, it's going to be a Broadway play.
Oh, well, that's good. That's exciting.
It's very exciting. I have a couple more hurdles to go to before it actually gets into an actual reality of casting and these things, but and it's something that is a bit beyond. It's going to be a musical, and I'm an actor that can carry a tune, but I'm not a singer.
But it's original. It's not a remake.
No, it is a revival.
A revival.
Yes.
Hmm.
Well, I'll tell you this. As soon as I know and I've gotten the green light when to do it, I'll come and I'll mention it to you first.
Okay. I'll get a scoop here on next question. How old are you, Bryan Cranston?
I'm 102.
No, you're not. Are we the same age?
I'm 66.
Okay. And I'm almost 66. And it's so great to see you, like, doing your thing, taking on new challenges, and, you know, and not going quietly into this good night. You know, it's nice to, do you ever want to retire? Do you ever want to take it easy? Personally, I don't, because I think I would shrivel up and die if I didn't work.
I would, my mother, God bless her, she had Alzheimer's, and she died of Alzheimer's about 15 years ago now. And so the possibility of that, in a hereditary sense, is there. And I often said, as long as I'm enjoying and having fun, I will continue to work. If I don't want to struggle to remember lines, I don't want to be nervous and anxious about any of that. If it comes to that, then I would retire immediately. I am not going to be the person on stage with an earpiece being fed his lines, and then I just hear it and repeat it, hear it, repeat it.
That sounds pretty good to me.
No, God. That itself puts more anxiety-inducing thoughts in my head than memorizing. You know, that's part of it. But if I ever lose the joy of performing, then I'll retire right away.
But so far...
No, I love it. What a gift. I have to constantly say, I can't believe what I get to do. This is just unbelievable that I get to play. I get to play for a living. And so when Monday comes around, I'm excited because I get to go back to work and play. It's just the best.
So, what a great way to live.
Yeah, it is. I've been very fortunate.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Katie.
You can watch Brian Cranston in the second season of Your Honor starting Sunday, June 15th on Showtime. And to all of my Next Question listeners, this is actually the last episode of our regular season. We're going to take a bit of a brief hiatus and cook up something new, new topics, new guests, and before too long, a whole new season of Next Question. And you know what? We might even change the name. So if you have suggestions, let us know. But don't stray too far. I have a few live events and bonus interviews that I'll be sharing with you on this very feed. Until then, thanks so much for listening, everyone. You'll hear us soon. Next Question with Katie Couric is a production of iHeartMedia and Katie Couric Media. The executive producers are me, Katie Couric, and Courtney Litz. The supervising producer is Lauren Hansen. Associate producers, Derek Clements and Adriana Fazio. The show is edited and mixed by Derek Clements. For more information about today's episode or to sign up for my morning newsletter, Wake Up Call, go to katiecouric.com. You can also find me at Katie Couric on Instagram and all my social media channels. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Hey everyone, it's Katie Couric, and I want to tell you about one of my new favorite podcasts. It's called A Really Good Cry with the amazing Roddy Devlukia, a plant-based chef, entrepreneur, and now a podcast host who will guide you through a journey of self-discovery, one tier at a time. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Roddy Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you want to level up your marketing and business knowledge, look no further than the Marketing School podcast, hosted by Neil Patel and yours truly, Eric Hsu. It is the number one marketing podcast on Apple and number 15 on business in the United States. Now, if you want to listen to interesting conversations with operators that have been there, done that, also with other interesting guests, then listen to Marketing School every weekday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.